Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of Control Amplified, the podcast for Control Global and ControlMagazine.com. And once again, you have the editors of Control here to talk to you about some interesting tidbits that we've picked up. And I'm Len Vermillion, editor-in-chief, and I have Jim Montague, executive editor, with me. Jim, welcome again.
Hey, glad to be here.
So, Jim had a very interesting, experience on a recent conference or trip or event, we'll call it, and he's going to tell us all about it. I mean, that's what we do here. We tell you what we've picked up while exploring the industry. So, Jim, I'm just going to turn this over to you and let you talk about this recent experience you had over there in Illinois.
Right, sure. Well, as I was telling Len, the week before last, on February 26th, I took Chicago's Metro Commuter Rail Service southwest along the famous Rock Island Line to Joliet, home of the well-known prison, which is made even more famous by the, of course, the opening of the classic Blues Brothers movie.
I have to interrupt you for a second, Jim, because I never thought we'd get the Blues Brothers in one of our podcasts. So kudos to you.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Well, we're in Chicago, a city of the broad shoulders and everything else. And this is one of the touchstones for many people in this area. In my case, I wasn't like convicted or anything, but I did get a chance to visit the ISA Will DuPage Chapters annual tabletop show and technical conference. For those who don't know it already, ISA Will DuPage is one of the ISA's most active U.S. chapters, and its leadership, members, and guest presenters have contributed to many Control articles over the years. We've also visited the tabletop show quite a few times in past years. I don't believe they had one last year, but they certainly came roaring back the week before last. I didn't get an exact count, but I think there was about 120 attendees who showed up at the Holiday Inn's Rock Run Convention Center to visit more than 35 exhibitors and attend six seminars in two tracks, which is not too shabby for, just a chapter, a regional organization. The first session I attended and covered was Freeze Protection and Winterization of Pressure Instruments by Dustin Bison, managing director at Multi Instruments Incorporated. He reported on encountering many creative and often seemingly desperate techniques for combating freezing issues in the field. These included, someone who pointed an open steam hose at a transmitter, and another place where they were wrapping instruments in what amounted to large balls of tape. So those are not really the best ways to combat freezing. And, there's a lot of better ways to do that, including the traditional methods of using insulation blankets, soft packs, and other remedies that are apparently often referred to as tea cozies. So they typically have a Teflon, silicone, or PVC outer jacket, and an inner materials made of a glass wool, ceramic fiber, or other materials. Bison reported their main advantages are that they're mostly lightweight, quick, and relatively easy to install, and they can be combined with other protections such as heat tracing lines. However, they also come with some disadvantages, and sometimes their insulation and coverage is sometimes inconsistent, so cold weather can penetrate. They may also have poor heat conduction, so heat can escape and cold air and water can get in, not to mention animals such as mice, wasps, and the highly intelligent ravens. They're all seeking warmth as well, and they're also seeking building materials for their own nests, so they need to be protected against. Because of lengthy turnaround times, blankets and other coverings, may also come off or walk away on their own. And then it can also be like a difficult jigsaw puzzle to get them back on, even if they can be found. So a second common way to protect instruments against freezing is heated box enclosures. They're usually made of molded glass reinforced polymer. Their advantages is are that they provide weathertight space heating capabilities, and they can be built to fit a variety of oddball shaped instruments. They typically carry NEMA 4 or 4X ratings, and they can't be misplaced because they're bolted on, which is certainly a plus. However, the disadvantage of enclosures is they usually have, generic designs, and they're because they're bolted on and they're, hardware, they, may have manually cut holes that can affect adversely their ratings, and they may not easily accommodate all the components, lines, and tubing bends inside, especially when new capabilities or components are added. When someone wants to add those inside the box. So, boxes are also a heat transfer medium, which was a little hard for me to understand, but so they require time to warm the devices inside because they're doing it via air, just as the air inside a refrigerator takes, seemingly forever to cool off, food and beverages. Beyond freezing, Bison reported that field-based instruments and protection measures can also degrade and leak due to sunlight, summer heat, rain, and other environmental conditions. In general, he reported that blankets are 25 to 50% reliable and effective, while boxes are 50 to 80% reliable and effective. To achieve, if you want more than that, though, to achieve about 90% reliability, Bison recommended contact heating enclosures and related technologies, which typically have a clamshell design that wraps around wetted parts of instruments, but also leaves electronics outside because those parts don't mind the cold and actually do better because of it. Conceptually, they're similar to automotive engine block heaters that can deliver heat directly to equipment that users want to keep warm. These devices include self-limiting electric or steam contact heaters. Their features and advantages include high efficiency heat conduction, universal power of anywhere from 100 to 300 volts and 50 hertz. Low power consumption of 48 watts or 29 watts, and easy integration with heat controllers, as well as a single circuit for tubing, bundles, and heaters. They also typically have CSA and ATEX hazardous area approvals and offer extreme versions that can function down to minus 60 or 70 Fahrenheit. Bison also reported that a 40-watt contact heater can save 300% on power compared to a 200-watt heating system using the traditional blankets, boxes, and related equipment. So that was a great session. A second session that I attended was Heat Tracing Best Practices by Larry Kaplan, Channel Partner Sales at HTS. And in a somewhat similar presentation, he reported that thermal integrity begins with good insulation, which can also let users deploy less powerful, less costly heaters. However, the relative performance of various insulating materials can vary widely, from foam glass with a 0.4 K factor, fiberglass or mineral wool with a 0.275 K factor, and down to the apparently awesome and much preferred Pyrogel, which has a 0.125 K factor. And for those who are wondering what K factor is, it's a measure of a material's thermal conductivity or its inherent ability to transfer heat. So having a lower number is better. Anyway, to select the most suitable heat tracing solution and materials, Kaplan advises filling out an application data sheet, such as Enpro's heat trace takeoff list. This can help users ask the right questions and guide them to the most helpful answers. The sheets typically cover basic scope details of each user's process application, heat trace types, methods and specifications, and heat trace design temperature data and other scope supporting documentation. Kaplan recommends using the classic heat trace equation of pipe footage times 1.35 equals heat trace footage. And he said that having one third again as much heat tracing is expected to cover most physical needs and constraints that are likely to occur with a given amount of process piping, that you're trying to keep warm. Kaplan also covered the types of self-regulating and mineral insulated cables, which I was surprised they use a line sensing thermostat and a panel-based controller to respond when ambient conditions get colder and when they could possibly cause current draws to ramp up. For example, HTS provides MIX cables that run at 30 to 60 watts per foot, 120 to 480 volts, and 1200 Fahrenheit maximum exposure. There's also HXR cables that run at 5 to 30 watts per foot, 120 to 277 volts, and 450 Fahrenheit maximum exposure. LXR cable that runs at 3 to 10 watts per foot, 120 to 277 volts, and 185 Fahrenheit maximum exposure. And finally, MXR cable that runs at 5 to 15 watts per foot, 120 to 277 volts, and up to 360 Fahrenheit maximum exposure. Finally, while the event's 35 exhibitors showcased a variety of innovative products and services, one standout for me included Crysound USA's handheld acoustic imager, which has a highly sensitive microphone that listens ultrasonically for any gas or vacuum leaks. So you can like carry it around a facility and it will show the location and intensity of leaks and can even discern apparently between different gases. So that was pretty cool. There, I also talked to somebody about what was described as an optical flow meter, but I can't find it in the notes or photos that I took. So I'll have to try and research that and talk about it later. But that's everything I learned at ISA World DuPage.
Well, I mean, we will have we'll have more reports on Control Global and especially Control Magazine, so you can look that up for that. So really good. I'm really glad we get to go out and see these smaller events. We always focus, we're heading into conference season here for the spring, and we tend to focus a lot, and everybody does, on the bigger conferences. People will be over in Hanover and things like that, but to get into the weeds here of the industry and really get down to the nitty-gritty, I thought.
Oh man. Well, I love interviewing people on the phone that I've done for many years, but boy, it's always better to get out face to face. So whenever they let me out of my cage, I'm glad to get out there and talk to people,
Just for the record, we do not keep Jim in a cage.
no, or chained to a desk. It's a purely a metaphor, but just as live theater and sports are always much better in person, it's the same goes for technical conferences and other events like that.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Jim. And I guess if anybody listening to this was actually there and wants to chime in, I mean, there's always
Oh man.
opportunity on our social media channels or comments on this pod, when this podcast is posted. Other than that, I mean, we are heading into conference season, as I said. So look for a lot more reports like this. And when Jim and I will be out and about, along with a lot of our other colleagues. So I'm looking forward to it. And
Thanks a lot.
yeah, so thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with our next episode in 2 weeks.
All right, take care.